was overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that'll determine what the future will bring. And I have to remind you, the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views, and, well, for the next hour, they're going to be the views of Daniel Eschelin. And Daniel has written a fascinating story called The True Story of the Bilderberger Group. Daniel, are you there?
I'm here, sir. Thank you so much for having me. Good day.
Well, have they been really running you ragged back there on press conferences and television, etc.?
We have, and this is the last one, and tomorrow I'm off back home.
All right, fine. Well,
first,
Daniel lives in Spain. He's written this book. And, of course, it's based upon, what, about 12 years of research of the Bilderbergers?
Exactly.
So how did it happen that you really got interested in studying this group and then writing about them?
In 1992, a friend of a friend was a former agent with the KGB, got in touch with me because he was in trouble. He was a double agent. Actually, I think he was a triple agent. And I think he was found out. His cover was blown somehow, and he needed help. And the man he was actually looking for was my grandfather, was at the time was a very old man. He lived to be 98 years young, and he died in 1996 or 7, I believe. So he was very, very old at the time, but he still thought that, you know, through my grandfather, he could get in touch with his people and somehow save this man's life. And he spoke to me about this group called the Builder something or other, and I had no idea what he was talking about. I was way over my head, but way, way over my head. He showed me documents, Henry Kissinger and Nixon and the secret meetings of how they killed President Kennedy. And I thought I was living in Alice in Wonderland parallel world universe. Anyway, the meeting ended. I had no idea what he was talking about. He disappeared. And then I thought to myself, well, you know, I just look into this thing because, you know, I thought it was a great way to pick up girls in bars, telling them, you know, the 007 James Bond-like stories. And then the more I got into it, the more I realized there was a lot of truth to what this man said. And sooner rather than later, that's about 1995, this parallel universe became my world, and I became the shadow dancer, as they called me for so many years, you know, dancing between raindrops and disappearing at the first sight of danger. And that's basically how I got into this amazing story, which became a lifelong quest called The Quest for the Bilderberger Group.
Well, I'm glad that you took on that quest and that you set out to research this. But anyway, this gentleman from the KGB was certainly well aware of what was going on, wasn't he?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, my grandfather did tell me quite a few things before he died. But again, I think the Bilderbergers were something that eluded even him. And so when this man spoke to me about the secret organization, I needless to say did not believe him because I think most people believe the world to be as it is, with a few people doing illegal things here and there. But generally speaking, governments run the government. You know, the politicians do their thing. You know, the courts protect our rights. You know, the business elite try to steal our money, but there's always somebody out there who is there, you know, to blow their cover. And basically, that's how the world works. Unfortunately, that's not the case. That's one of the things I discover or uncover in my book, The True Story of the Bilderberg Group, about how the world really runs and who's behind the curtain.
And I think that is really so very important. Now, did your family come from Russia originally?
That's right. We're from the Soviet Union. My father was born in St. Petersburg. My mother is from White Russia, Belarus. We are what is known as White Russians, people who were not for the Tsar, who did not support the Bolsheviks, who believed in the Constitution as the ultimate law of the land. We're what's known in Russia as the Cadets, Constitutional Democrats. And my great-grandfather belonged to the Cadet Party, whose members were also Milyukov, Kerensky, Vladimir Nabokov's father. So again, constitutional Democrats. And I do exactly the same thing with the United States. I support the American Constitution as the highest law of the land.
Well, we appreciate that. And of course, Daniel is a Canadian citizen living in Spain. We're going to be right back in a moment or two as we will tell us this incredible, incredible story. Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay. And Daniel lives in Spain, but he has written a book entitled The True Story of the Bilderberger Group. And, of course, the book has sold millions of copies in Europe. When they try to get it published in America, because of the degree of control over the publishing industry here, why there was, nobody would take the book, and the only person who was really published it was a friend of ours, Chris Milligan, who we've had on here many times. But was this sort of a surprise to you, Daniel, when you realized that the media here in America was so controlled that none of the major publishers would even consider taking your book?
Well, I pretty much knew that that was going to be the case. I mean, we went through the motions of getting it published. In fact, we had a very good deal, quite a lucrative deal, in fact, with a major publishing company. I can't name them, at least that's what my lawyers tell me in public. But, they bought the rights, paid the rights. And then somebody upstairs in the executive suite found out that this book, the Bilderberger book, is about to be published by the same people who belong to the Bilderberg Club. And lo and behold, the editor who bought the rights gets fired or he leaves the company. He basically just dropped out of sight. And then as of that day, nobody wanted to know anything about it. And we were forced to look for another publisher. And thank God we found Chris Milligan of Trine Day. This is a very, very brave man. And I hope he publishes a lot of books because he's doing a world of good. And he's certainly one of the few people out there in the United States who still believes in the freedom of the press in the Fourth Estate.
Well, did they actually give you some of the money that they promised you then?
Well, they gave us some of the money, not all of it, but then, we knew that it would cost us more money to actually fight them in court and get the rest of it. We just kind of, but again, it's a wonderful story. I had no illusions about getting the book published by a big publisher because, again, one of the things I document in my book are how all the biggest media corporations, the ABCs, the New York Times, the Washington Post, the NBCs, etc. of this world, how they're all interlocked with so many other foundations controlled by the Rockefellers and the Carnegies, et cetera, et cetera. So I pretty much knew what to expect, but I didn't realize just to what extent until I came a couple of weeks ago to the United States to do the promotion in the United States and in Canada, just to what degree the entire American press, corporate media, is controlled from top to bottom by very, very few men, as I call them, the men behind the curtain who really do control the power and who control the media and who control the politicians, et cetera, et cetera. And then, through the media, you can control the politicians and the business elite, the ones you have that. You have the monopoly, and that's what people like David Rockefeller like so much. That's why they love communism.
Hold that thought. We'll be back in just a moment here. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and Daniel was just saying that although the book had been widely circulated throughout Europe, when they came to the United States, only one publisher would of course accept the book. And then, of course, when somebody and the management found out what was happened, the editor who purchased the book was fired. Daniel received some compensation, but certainly they had no intention of allowing this book to be circulated in America. Why? Because they don't want the American people to know about the Bilderberger Group or how powerful it is. And although the organization has existed since 1953, it is only within the last about 2 years there has been any mention of this in one or two of the major publications. Prior to that, totally blocked out by the people who control our reality. So, Daniel, what have you found about the Bilderberger? Who are the Bilderbergers? Why should we be concerned about their influence over our lives?
Well, first of all, let me tell you what they're not. Bilderberg, they're not a Jewish Masonic conspiracy, although many people on the Internet believe them to be Jews or Masons. Some of them are. Some of them are Christians, Catholics, Protestants. If you have a few pedophiles thrown in there as well for good measure. You have a few homosexuals. But generally speaking, they're not a Jewish Masonic conspiracy. Neither are they the Illuminati conspiracy, whatever the heck that is, as so many people, again, claim on the Internet with very fragile logic to back it up. And finally, Bilderberg is not a monolith, meaning that no group of people, I don't care how powerful they are, sit around a table in a dark room holding hands, staring at a crystal ball, planning our future. Bilderberg is what I call the aristocracy of purpose. It's the NATO alliance, Europe, the United States, and Canada, who for the last 53 years, since 1954, have come together to jointly manage the well-being, quote-unquote, for their sake, obviously, of the planet, natural resources, the people, everything that moves, walks, crawls, or breathes, or flies in the universe, according to them, that's that's there. So again, it's the aristocracy of purpose between the North Americans and the Europeans. There are two things involved in the Bilderbergers' interests as far as they're concerned. One is the money supply. Of course, they're all money people. But money ultimately becomes worthless unless there's energy to go around. So over the last 25 years or so, the number one issue at every Bilderberger conference has been the energy reserves and energy supplies. And again, oil and money, these are the two principal issues which guide most, if not all, of their interests.
And these really are the richest bankers. These are the people who control the central banks and the corporations and the governments. And they're really, of course, the movers and shaker of both the United States and the Western Hemisphere and Europe.
Well, just to appreciate exactly what we're dealing with here, Bilderberg, the annual conferences attract somewhere between 120 and 130 members, out of which 50-60, these are your regular invitees. People have been coming for years, if not decades, such as David Rockefeller and Henry Kissinger and Zbigniew Brzezinski, for example. And then you have another 50-60 who come invited once a year. They have, you know, the Bilderbergers have a look at them. If they like them, they bring them back. If they don't, they discard them like an old shoe. But just, you know, to give you an idea of what power we deal with, every president of a European country, United States and Canada, is member of the Bilderberg Club. The United States president normally never comes while in office because every minute of his time is accounted for, but he always is well represented by his representatives, people such as Richard Holbrooke or Douglas Feith or Zbigniew Brzezinski or Henry Kissinger. One of the people who come in and out of government, so these are their representatives. Every central banker of every European nation is there as well. President of International Monetary Fund, the World Bank, the Federal Reserve, all European commissioners come, 100 top CEOs of leading international multinational corporations, such as Citigroup, Chase Manhattan Bank, BP, Shell, Texaco, Merck, Boeing, etc., etc., Mercedes-Benz, and with them at the same table sit all of the representatives of the European royalty, and finally they are joined by the leading representatives of the media elite of the Western world, people from the New York Times, the Washington Post, Le Monde from France, Grupo Prisa from Spain, Financial Times, Wall Street Journal, The Economist, etc., etc. Again, this is one of the reasons we have or might not have ever heard of the Bilderbergers. And if we think about it for a minute, if one of these people, for example, David Rockefeller, travels anywhere around the world, he carries a throng of over 100 reporters who report on his comings and goings. Now, when you get all of these people, powerful people who collectively control about 85% of the world's wealth in one room, there's no one in the entire world, for the exception of myself and this man by the name of Jim Tucker, who are out there pursuing these people, trying to get to the bottom of what they're doing behind closed doors during their annual Bilderberger secret meetings.
And, of course, we've talked to Jim Tucker. He was an old line, a reporter. I think he worked for 30 or 40 years in the media until he retired and went to work for the Spotlight. And suddenly he discovered that there was this group, this secret group that was holding secret and clandestine meetings. And so Jim Tucker has been tracking them for many years, and apparently Daniel works very closely with Jim. And they, of course, then have been monitoring what's going on. Now, how were you ever able to get anybody within the organization to be able to tell you what really goes on there? Because everybody's sworn to secrecy, and the man who is giving you the information basically is risking his life to let you know what's going on.
It's men. It's plural. There are several people. Well, actually, I shouldn't say men because there's actually people, not only men. I think tenacity would how I would describe it. You know, initially people would just literally would not pay any attention to you and blow you off for personal security reasons as well as for any other reason. But then over the years, then, you know, they see you coming every single year. They follow your work a little bit now, especially with the Internet. They can follow what you do a lot more. And then over the years, through tenacity, to try to get these people to open up, to calling them, to talking to them, just to letting them know that, you know, what you are as a human being, you get people to open up because a lot of the people who attend Bilderberg also have the misgivings because not all of them are as evil as David Rockefeller's of this world. However, they don't have the natural outlet to get this information out to the people. And when they actually find or come across people such as myself, you know, and if you can, as in my case, establish a close working relationship with some of these individuals who attend their annual meetings, you get some very valuable information. Again, not for personal sake or benefit, I think for the benefit of humanity, because in the end, I'm not doing it for myself. I'm doing it for absolutely everybody's sake, because I think throughout history, the only thing that people have always wanted to do or to be is to be free.
Well, of course, actually, there have been attempts on your life. Haven't they attempted to threaten you or bribe you? Why don't you tell a little bit about that?
Right. Well, in 1996, we found out Bilderberger plans to dismantle Canada, dismember it, and merge the English-speaking part of Canada and the United States into one greater North America, something, incidentally, they have finally achieved 11 years later. Now, all the entire Canadian media let the entire world, or definitely in Canada, know what was going on. Hundreds of thousands of Canadians came out on the streets to protest this supposed illegal breakup of Canada. So again, in 1996, they tried to kill me. I almost walked into an elevator. I was missing a floor. I was literally pulled out of that thing, yanked by my source, who met me in one of the skyscrapers in downtown Toronto. In 1998, they tried to bribe me. In 1999, have me arrested. In 2005, my plane flying from Madrid to Germany was diverted, and I was pulled off the plane in Milan, interrogated for 10 hours before they finally let me go. Last year, I had trouble entering my own country, and they tried to bribe me off and buy me off with a blank check. But, you know, I think the question is, you know, how much does freedom cost? How many zeros would one want to have to be free, not only for my sake, but I think for the sake of generations to come?
Well, I certainly applaud you for what you've done, because what we need are people who are willing to risk it all to try to inform the American people about this group of one of the most powerful groups in the world that most people have never heard of. Now, basically, these are the people then who make the decisions as far as political leaders are concerned. Didn't they actually, of course, pick Bill Clinton to become the president?
Well, it's one of these things that people don't seem to understand. I think one of the reasons that people think it's some kind of a giant conspiracy is because of so much fragile logic one finds on the Internet. Nobody really tells anybody what to do. The way it would work, for example, you know, at the end of January, beginning of February, we have the Davos Economic Forum. Then in March, we have the Trilateral Commission regional meeting. In April, there's a CFR meeting. May, June, the Bilderbergers meet, and then in September, October, you have the World Bank International Monetary Fund meeting. But nobody is really leading the discussions, but the discussions and the ideas, they kind of flow from one forum to the other, and before you know it, they become the central issue, the focal point of European Parliament, which then pass on their decisions to national governments who debate and discuss them. And before you know it, you have the United Nations Army proposal, which was first proposed with the Bilderbergers in 1992. And then in 1996, again, they talked about it in Toronto. In 1998, shortly before the war in Kosovo, they proposed the idea of the Rapid Reaction Force, where you had the 60-man standing army, European standing army, in case of another atrocity, as they called it. And then in 2007 or 2006, shortly after the Bilderbergers met in Canada, a Toronto Star, which belongs to the Bilderberg Club, publishes on the front page of their newspaper, the United Nations is putting together a world army for purposes of protecting the world. And that would be the same way how they would elect potential leaders. Bill Clinton came for the first time in 1991 as a lowly governor of Arkansas. He was invited to Baden-Baden, where David Rockefeller asked him if he knew anything about North American Free Trade Agreement. Bill Clinton had no idea what North American Free Trade Agreement was, so Rockefeller gave him a master class, and then when he said, great, now what do you want me to do with this? And Rockefeller said, we would like for you to support this proposal. And Clinton said, of course, David. And so Rockefeller thrust his hand out and said, thank you, Mr. President. And well, we all know what happened in 1992.
Thank you, Mr. President. Hold that thought. We'll be right back. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest is Daniel Estulin, a fascinating book which we have and which we were, of course, going to stock and carry, and which we would encourage every one of our listeners to get. It is the definitive book on the Bilderberger Group, certainly one of the most influential organizations in the world, because here is where the movers and shakers of the world come together to meet. Well, ordinarily then, on every year, why you are able to get information on what really goes on inside the meetings, information that most other people have never been able to obtain. Would that be a fair statement?
I didn't hear the first part of what you said.
Well, I was saying that certainly you have had an opportunity to talk to the people, members of the Bilderbergers, and at least some of them have let you know what goes on within these meetings, which are actually totally secret. Nobody's supposed to know, but these people have actually tried to use you as a vehicle to get the truth out. Would that be a fair statement?
Absolutely, and we know that it is true because over the last 12 years or so, my batting average is about 900 points. I think Ted Williams, who is the best player in baseball's history, batted 400. So I think batting 900 makes me the best baseball player in the universe. And again, we've predicted everything from the war in Kosovo, which we predicted in 1996, 3 years before the hostilities. In the year 2002, when they met in Chantilly, Virginia, we said that the war in Iraq has been postponed until February, March 2003, when the entire world was talking about the immediate conflict taking place in September 2002. We also talked about the oil prices in 2003 going up to about $100 a barrel, when they were about 32 or 33 or 34. Well, we're looking at it right now. We're about at 90, so it's definitely going to go over 100. 2 years ago, we predicted that gold prices would go over $750 an ounce. When they're at 425, I believe, again, we're looking at 750, 770 right now. There's just too many predictions to go about and to go around. And again, one of the most terrifying predictions that I made, and unfortunately I was right on it, took place in 2001 when I was shown a secret document by one of the attendees when they were actually talking about child kidnappings as a way to get people to implant microchips. A year later, I believe in the United States, he had this massive kidnappings, and right now in Europe, every country in Europe is experiencing this massive wave of kidnappings.
Well, now, basically, what do they say about the economy, and what do they say about a war with Iran? Do you have any thoughts on either one of those subjects?
Well, I can tell you right now that the war in Iran is definitely off the table. I'll go out on a limb and say this so that people know that when we actually don't have a war, then they'll know exactly why. The European Bilderbergers have basically drawn a line in the sand. They're saying that we're not going to let you go in. Now, when they're saying they don't mean George Bush. They're talking about the men behind the curtain. I always use an example of Wizard of Oz. If you don't understand who runs the show, as in the Wizard of Oz, you must find the men behind the curtain. And in this particular case, the men behind the curtain are not the American government, but the people, the money people, the Rockefellers, the Rothschilds, the Morgans, etc., who actually have the money and who make the important decisions on behalf of the world elite, who represent the Bilderberger Club. So again, the Europeans, the French, the Russians, and also the Chinese, who belong to the Trilateral Commission, have drawn this line in the sand and saying, hands off of Iran. They have just too much money invested in the country. You know, there's blood in the water, and you know what happens when there's blood in the water. It usually leads to a good fight, and all of these great nations are taking the gloves off, and they're not going to let the United States invade.
Well, I certainly hope and pray that you're right. Certainly that would be a terrible, terrible disaster. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and I asked Daniel about Iran, and he says that the Bilderbergers have told the power elite that they are not to invade Iran, and I hope and pray he's right. I hope that everything we're seeing is just blustering about Iran, and that the people who really pull the strings behind the scenes have let it be known that they're not going to allow an invasion. What do they say about the monetary situation? Certainly it looks like America is headed into an inflationary spiral. In fact, much of the world is headed into an inflationary spiral, which will destroy the value of the currencies.
Exactly.
Are they concerned about that?
Well, not only is it a concern, but it's actually a planned mechanism. Now, about 10 years ago, I saw a phrase. I came across a phrase in the Council on Foreign Relations white paper. They were talking about this thing called demand destruction, quote-unquote. Now, I didn't understand the phrase, so I kind of skipped over the phrase and went on reading the rest of the report. I remember that phrase about 5 years later when I came across the same phrase, demand destruction, in the Trilateral Commission report, and then in the Club of Rome report, and then in one of the Bilderberger reports. So I asked a friend of mine who works for the World Bank, what does it mean, demand destruction? And he said to me, well, how do you destroy the demand? I said, well, I don't know, how do you destroy the demand? He said, by destroying the economy. And this is exactly what we're witnessing right now, the wholesale destruction, not only of the United States economy, but Canadian economy, Spanish economy, European economy. And why would they want to destroy the European and world economy? Because poor people don't travel, don't buy things, and this way you are not using the energy supplies which take to make all of these things we buy, all these trinkets and all these things we buy also to travel around the world. And as the oil is a finite resource, we're in a situation right now where the corporations who must have their infinite growth, but they have a limit, and that limit is finite natural resources, finite energy supplies. And when the two butt heads, unfortunately, one has to give way. And this is exactly why we have this wholesale destruction of the United States economy and every other economy in the world, because they must transfer the wealth, as they did in the Great Depression, from the poor people, from us, to them, the wealthy individuals.
And so this is basically then they're going to really undermine the economies both of the Western Hemisphere and of Europe as a means of controlling the population.
But people must understand that the Rockefellers will not be hurt. Just under the Great Depression, Rockefellers didn't lose any money. Simply was a transfer of wealth from us to them. As is now, the people with a lot of money, they have taken their money out of the housing market a long time ago. And again, as proof of that, last year when I wrote my Bilderberg 2006 report, short after their meeting in Canada, I said that one of the Bilderbergers was extremely concerned about the housing situation when he said, what will happen when very shortly people who have a $500,000 mortgage find out that their homes are only worth $100,000? And then Henry Kissinger stood up and he said, we'll just let them burn. And this is exactly what we're witnessing right now. This took place over 1.5 years ago, and the American financial market and the housing market has been utterly destroyed by these people. Canadian financial and housing market is also in a meltdown, free fall. Spain has been destroyed about 1.5 years ago. France has no money. We saw what happened in England with Northern Rock being declared insolvent and people lining up to take their money out of the bank. Again, this is wholesale destruction, but it is done on purpose. This is not an accident. These people are controlling this financial meltdown, disintegration, for personal gain.
And I think you're absolutely right. In fact, as I see all the information in the newspapers about what's going on, I realize that we would not be reading this unless, of course, they wanted it there. If they wanted to keep it a secret, they would keep it a secret.
That's a very good point. That's a very good point.
And, of course, they want to focus our attention on it. It's all a matter of perception. As we begin to get concerned, what can we do to protect ourselves? And then, of course, they'll step in. And they obviously have a solution, but it's not going to benefit us. It's going to benefit them. Well, our guest is Daniel Estulin. This incredible story is the true story of the Bilderbergers, and subtitled Since 1945, The World's Most Powerful People Have Met in Secret Once a Year Until Now. Well, we'll be back in just a moment with Daniel as we explore the background of the Bilderberger movement, because he, of course, has been researching this on a regular basis. So hang on, we'll be back here in just a moment at Radio Liberty. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty. Our guest is Daniel Estulin. We're talking about his book, True Story of the Bilderberger Group. What sort of response did you get there within the mass media? I know you've been in New York, and he certainly has had some television interviews. Have you been able to get on any of the major stations back there?
Well, the closest we came to actually being interviewed by someone important is Amy Goodman. But when we actually came up unannounced into her office, I think she hid it somewhere in the back room. At Moon come out, her secretary told us she was not around, although then she had to admit that she actually was in town. So I think the question is that she just simply would not want to interview us. Again, people like Amy Goodman, they're your gatekeepers. Their job is to keep people like myself out to make sure that the people, the regular folks who are actually leading this fight against the oligarchs and against the power elites, actually don't get in and find out the key information, which just may help them in this fight for survival of the planet.
And that's why, of course, ladies and gentlemen, it's so vitally important that you out in the listening audience get Daniel's book and, of course, get the audio tapes that we'll have available. And then in a few minutes, we'll tell you how to get to his website where you can get much more information. But certainly, Daniel has come over to the United States on a short tour to try to get the information out. But, of course, with most really important issues. They are not going to allow this to be on the front pages of the New York Times or the Washington Post or the Wall Street Journal because, of course, all of those organizations are tied into the Bilderberger, as are 95% of the major media outlets in the United States. They're all controlled by the same people. Why? Because that's how they can control what you hear, what you see, what you read, and ultimately what you believe. Would that be a fair statement, Daniel?
No, absolutely. I think the great magician, the great hypnotist of the 20th century, this oblong box everybody has in the corner of their living room called the television set that tells us what to think, how to dress, how to walk, how to smell, how to talk, what we should think. Most of the time, people, especially in the area of political science, when they believe that their opinions are theirs, are in fact manipulated from behind the scenes by very intelligent, very powerful and very, very evil individuals who control what we think. The television has become, at the end of the 20th century and the beginning of the 21st, you know, the Bible, it has become the ultimate truth, the gospel. But there are actually two types of gospels. There's the true gospel, and there is what these people have been peddling, which is, again, a type of prison without bars where our opinions are molded and influenced by very, very powerful men.
Hold that thought. We'll be right back. Hold that thought. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest, Daniel Estulin, did his book, The True Story of the Bilderberger Group. And, Daniel, would you like to, of course, get your webpage out where people would go and get more information on the Bilderbergers?
Thanks. It's www.danielestulin.com.
www.danielestulin, ESTULIN.com. That's pretty simple. What will people find when they get there?
Well, they find daily analysis of news reports, both in English and in Spanish, lots of photographs, documentaries, videos, interviews, things that people can go to and understand the information which they need to get and to understand in order to be able to fight the evil spirits and the evil individuals who make up the Bilderberger Group, the Trilateral Commission, the CFR, because, again, most of the time the opinions that we have are not ours. They've been skillfully imposed upon us by the people from behind the curtain who manipulate the news in their favor and against our wishes, but we just don't quite realize it. So people who read my webpage also have access to links to other webpages which give them important information, which I think will free them from this yoke of the New World Order and the power elites who try to control us.
Well, now, of course, do the people in Europe, the average individual, do they really have some grasp of what's going on? Do they realize that there is this power elite that's really directing the course of Europe and, of course, here in the United States?
Well, I think they do because, again, you know, my book has sold over 1.5 million copies, most of it in Europe. The book has just now been published by Tri-Day in the United States and in Canada. Europeans, generally speaking, are far more skeptical than Americans because I think throughout history they've had to suffer a lot more, personally suffer wars and retributions by the power elites. So they do understand somewhat, but again, not to the extent which I describe and explain in the books, because that just goes beyond the capacity of most people. But again, they are more readily able to admit that these people exist and also accept the information once it has been presented, as I do in my book.
Well, of course, one of the common misconceptions is that communism is the enemy. What's the truth? What's the relationship between the elitists in our country and the Bolsheviks?
Well, I think, you know, the man who understands most about communism is a gentleman by the name of David Rockefeller, although we have been told and taught that people like Karl Marx and Engels and Stalin and Lenin, they seem to be the ideologues of communism. It's in fact David Rockefeller, because to people like him, communism is simply a system of control. And when you control the government by being these men behind the curtain, you control a monopoly, which means that you control absolutely everything. You keep the competition out. That's how the Rockefellers of this world have always liked to work, keeping the competition out and controlling both sides of the equation.
And, of course, that's the beauty of course, producing over in China. You don't have to worry about competition. And anybody there that tries to organize a union, why, you just have them taken out and be shot.
Well, so, exactly. I mean, David Rockefeller, he publicly has stated he was a great admirer of Mao Zedong. This is a man who killed millions of people. Imagine if somebody came out and said that they were great admirers of Hitler or of Stalin. They'd be crucified. But when David Rockefeller says that he's a great admirer of Mao, no one seemed to mind very much.
Well, of course, you mentioned earlier about, of course, David Rockefeller shaking hands with Bill Clinton several years before he became the Democrat Party nominee. And David Rockefeller said, yes, congratulations, Mr. President. What about Jimmy Carter? What was the relationship between President Carter and David Rockefeller?
Well, I think basically the choices in for the 1976 elections were not appetizing to the Democrats or to the Republicans, basically to the men behind the curtain. So the Rockefellers and Alan Greenspan and Zbigniew Brzezinski, who were the founders of the Trilateral Commission, got together with some of the older generation Democrats, and they were looking for ideal candidates. And one of these ideal candidates just happened to be Jimmy Carter, not because he was a good politician, an honorable man, but because he was a crook. And once you're a crook, and once they know that you're a crook, and once they have you in their pocket, they basically control you. And this is the best way to work with politicians, that once you're compromised, you basically do whatever they want you to do, lest you want to be exposed in public. And people like Jimmy Carter's of this world obviously don't have too many problems with ethics. And so he was elected in 76, even though when the campaign started, as you all remember, only 5% of Democrats thought that he was the ideal man for the job. That is until Time magazine and New York Times got in on the act. And suddenly, literally overnight, Jimmy Carter became the candidate of choice for the Democrats, and then, needless to say, he won the elections.
And, of course, he was inducted into the Trilateral Commission, surrounded himself with people from David Rockefeller's Trilateral Commission, but nothing has changed. It's always the same. Even today, the man who controls George Bush is Dick Cheney, who just comes from the Trilateral Commission.
So, well, exactly. One of the things I document in the book, in the section on the CFR, how every president, presidential candidate, and even independent candidates, how all of these top individuals, all of them over the last 60 years have belonged or to the Bilderberger Group, which is a more exclusive of the three, or to the Trilateral Commission, or to the Council of Foreign Relations, or to various combinations of these groups, not only the presidential candidates and the presidents, but secretaries of the Treasury, the judges, the Secretary of Defense, the Joint Chiefs of Staff. So basically, we're living in a country where we believe in democracy, but it's just an illusion. These people are not true Democrats. They're professional Democrats making money off of us and making money off of democracy. And again, if you want to get to the top and you don't belong and you don't play the game, you will never, ever get to the top, which is why, again, anybody who is chosen, not elected, but chosen by these individuals has to belong to one of these organizations.
And, of course, this is not simply just the United States. Doesn't this sort of interlock with most of the nations over there in Europe as well?
Exactly. In every nation of the world, for example, Tony Blair was a member of the Bilderberg Club. He came in 1993. Then in 1994, he became the leader of the Labour Party. In 1997, he became Prime Minister. The gentleman who is there right now, Brown, he was also a member of the Bilderbergers several years ago. The people in Spain, all of them belong to the Trilateral Commission, to Bilderbergers as well. In France, you have Bernard Cuchet, who is the founder of Doctors Without Borders, who is now a member of Sarkozy Parliament or Cabinet. He is a member of the Bilderbergers during the last decade or so, as well as a member of the Trilateral Commission. Again, if you look at any one of the politicians in key positions, be they national positions, of course, every Secretary of NATO is also a member of the Bilderberger Club. It makes it much easier to launch wars and wage wars against third world nations when you're given orders by the power elite. So it doesn't matter where you look, the illusion of democracy is just that, an illusion. The power always remains within a very small group of very, very powerful people. And it's, again, it's inconceivable if you take the United States and it's 300 million people, that the only people who get to be elected to the post of President of the United States are the people who belong to the Bilderberger Club, the Trilateral Commission, or the Council of Foreign Relations. Percentage and probability-wise, it's absolutely impossible and inconceivable.
And don't you think that they ordinarily will simply run somebody on the Republican ticket and then somebody on the Democratic ticket, and then we get a choice between the candidate of their choice?
Absolutely. Now, we are given two candidates who are pre-selected by the Bilderbergers or are pre-selected by the men behind the curtain, and we vote on one of them. If you're like men like Barry Goldwater, who did not belong to any one of these organizations, they destroy you by painting you as an extremist. That is exactly how these people work.
And the game has been played over and over again. But nobody tells the American people, and that's why this book is so vitally important today. And so what's the relationship between the Bilderbergers and the Trilateral Commission?
Well, actually, there are three organizations. The Bilderbergers are the more exclusive one of the group. There's about 120, 130 members. It's your NATO alliance, Europe, United States, and Canada. The CFR, Council on Foreign Relations, this is the American division. It would be an equivalent to the Bilderbergers, or the American branch. There's about 3,000 members, out of which 262 belong to the corporate media. Again, we know why we don't get any of this stuff on national television or in the printed press. And then the Trilateral Commission will be the junior varsity to the CFR. And it's, again, Americas, Europe, and Asia, thus trilateral. It's about 325 members who every 3 years change their leadership council. And the people are in new people are invited into the group. But again, once you're in, you're always in. So even the people who may not attend this year's Bilderberg conference, they still get the Bilderberg report, that is the Bilderberg minutes of the last meeting, who said what and where and what they've decided during the meeting. It's like a big giant mafia conspiracy. Once you're in, you're always in. But it's understood that nobody is allowed to speak publicly about what decisions have been taken or what conclusions have been made, because if they do, they know what will happen to them.
And there'll be terrible, terrible retribution. Well,
exactly.
What about China? Because here's one of the great industrial giants of the world today. Soon will be the greatest manufacturing center in the world. And this has all largely been built with money from the United States, from one of our agencies, our corporations, our banks. Certainly, so the Europeans have helped out a little bit. Really, China is primarily a product of the United States transferring our wealth halfway around the world as we move our manufacturing offshore and we impoverish our people. Where do the Bilderbergers fit into China? Are they concerned about it? Are they supporting it? What's this really all about?
Well, initially, if you want to destroy your economy, and you need to lower the personal income of people in the United States, you just outsource everything to poor nations such as China, where people work for slave labor costs, I think it's like 25 cents an hour or 50 cents an hour. They work 7 days a week. My brother-in-law is living in China right now, and he said it's just, you know, the conditions are absolutely appalling. People don't have holidays. They get physically slapped every time they do something which they're not supposed to. They get paid about 25, 30 cents per hour. They get paid docked if they have to go to the bathroom. But what basically has happened right now is China has become this behemoth, this giant, with nuclear warheads. So what you're seeing right now is economic warfare. One of the reasons that the oil prices are as high as they are is they're trying to destroy China's potential by increasing oil prices. And again, everything we have is made with energy, which is oil. In the 1980s, they tried the same strategy with Russia by lowering the price of oil and bankrupting Russia. And they're trying to do the same thing right now with China by raising the oil prices. Again, you have to understand that these people control all the corporations. They control all the presidencies. They control the European Parliament. They control the central banks, and they control the corporations, the media. So you can shine the light of truth, as they like to call it, on any issue you wish. And right now, you know, China is the boogeyman, and needless to say, nobody feels very, very comfortable amongst the Bilderbergers with China's unlimited potential.
Well, what about this idea of a new world order? We hear a lot of talk about this idea of a world government under a ruling elite. Where does the Bilderbergers fit into that? Do they support it or oppose it?
Well, actually, it's not really a one world order, because there's been several one world orders throughout history, going back all the way to the Roman times. This is more of a one-world government, where the plan is to have one country, one currency, one army, one constitution. We see it in Europe, where before him we had a European nations, flags, constitutions, currencies, borders, nation states. And what you have right now is one country called Europe, one currency called the Euro, one constitution, which takes precedence over national constitution. You have the European standing army, which is called the Rapid Reaction Force, which, again, incidentally, the Bilderbergers first discussed in 1992 and became law last year. And now you have the creation of the North American Union, Canada, Mexico, and the United States. Yet no one seems to be talking about this, for the exception of one mainstream journalist by the name of Lou Dobbs on CNN. Africa is now also a union, and they're quickly forging partnerships in Asia. So you're going to have the Asian Union over the next couple of years. And when you take these different economic blocks and you fuse them into one, you have what basically these people have been after since the Middle Ages, which is one world government. And if you want, we can talk about how what today is called the Bilderberger Group 600 years ago was called something else, but the idea behind it hasn't changed in all this time.
And I think that's really so important, that these groups, really these ideas passed down from generation to generation. We changed the name of the organization, but the ultimate objective and ultimate goal doesn't change. What was this group known as in the Middle Ages?
Well, about 600 years ago, it was called the Venetian Black Nobility, or Venetian Nobility. I spent about 2.5 years researching these people in the National Library of Florence, which is one of the most important research libraries in the world, right after the British Museum and the National Archives in the United States. What I found is fascinating read in that the First Nation State was created right after the signing of the Treaty of Florence in 1439, when the eastern and western rites of the church were merged temporarily into one by people such as Pius II, future Pope, and Nicholas of Cusa, representing the western rites, and Father Isidore representing the Greek church. The First Nation State was created with Louis XI in France and then Henry VII in England at the end of the 1400s. And beginning of the 1500s, and what that gave us for the first time in history is natural law, constitution, social welfare, and also a mandate given to the Republic where people for the first time in history stopped being slaves and government started working for the people, and also governments had the prerequisite of improving and working on scientific discovery, which improved the lives of all the people in the world. And for the first time in history, about that time, mankind started winning square kilometers of space against nature, and the population, again, for the first time in history, doubled. And if you look at population curves throughout history, and when you see this very steep curve, that's about the time of the creation of the nation states. So for the past 550 years, since 1439, 1440, these people have been after the destruction of nation states and the creation, again, of oligarchical rule of powerful individuals ruling over the majority of humanity. And again, this is something that Zbigniew Brzezinski talked about in his book, Tetratronic Age, when he said that in the near future, the world will be divided into two groups of people, the slaves and the slave owners.
I know. Now, what book was that you're speaking of?
That's called Tetratronic Age, written by Zbigniew Brzezinski.
That isn't the Between Two Ages.
It's the same book.
Right, okay, fine. Yeah, such an important book, written in 1970 by Zbigniew Brzezinski, who's a member of the Council on Foreign Relations of the Trilateral Commission of the Bilderbergers. And he is the Democrat, Henry Kissinger is the Republican, David Rockefeller is the guy who controls both of them, and most people have really little idea what's really going on or who really runs the world. But Zbigniew Brzezinski is one of the major architects. The book we're talking about, and which we hope all of you will want to get, which is available from Radio Liberty, The True Story of the Bilderberger Group. Fabulous information you're not going to hear elsewhere. The story of the Black nobility is so important to grasping what's really going on in the world today. And we'll be back in just a moment to wrap up this afternoon's program here at Radio Liberty. Well, Daniel, we have 3 minutes for you to wrap up the program.
Okay, I think we still have a lot to do, and I think this fight is far from over. One of the things that people always wish to know when I give my conferences and talks around the world is, what can we do? And I think the most important thing we can do is, first of all, understand how money works and what money can do for us and how we, through money, can hurt these people. Because singing songs, protest songs, and during manifestations, I don't think has ever worked throughout history. Fighting these people, we can never win the fight. They have all the guns. But if we know what to do with money, we can really hurt them. And one of the things that I suggest very strongly is for people to please get out of debt and do it now. Don't wait any longer. If you have homes, sell these homes, get the money, take it out, put it in something such as gold or silver, physical gold or silver, not paper gold or silver. And again, learn to live in local communities where if you have money, instead of putting in Chase Manhattan Bank or Citibank, which is going to go and feed the Chinese government and approve the interests of the world elite, put that money in local banks where you know that this money is working for you and supporting the local economy. Again, we must understand how money works and what money can do for us. And if we understand the benefit of this money, we can really, really hurt these people, because more than anything else what they're afraid of is us using our money as a weapon against them.
And I think you're absolutely right. I think it's so vitally important that people do understand that the other side is vulnerable. Everything they do is dishonest. It's done in secrecy. These people are above the law. They think nothing at all about arranging assassinations or manipulating elections. They have no real respect for the Judeo-Christian values, which most of us do embrace. Well, Daniel, we certainly appreciate everything that you've done. We appreciate your courage and the fact that you've been willing to actually hang in there, and I do hope that perhaps we can talk to you again. You have about 40 or 50 seconds. What's your last thought for our listeners?
We will win this war, I think, and I feel, when the power of love, once and for all, overcomes the love of power, and I'd like to leave it at that.
The power of love over love comes the
overcomes
love of power.
The love of power.
God bless. Thanks very much for being with us.
Thank you so much for having me.
Bye-bye.
Take care.
And I hope, ladies and gentlemen, you've enjoyed our interview with Daniel Estulin, a very courageous gentleman who is dedicating his life to trying to get the information out. And we hope that you'll utilize his information, get it off his website, and help us disseminate the truth while there is still time. We'll be back in just a moment here at Radio Liberty to wrap up the program. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and we do hope that many of you have enjoyed the interview with Daniel Estulin. This is the second interview, and those two interviews and one other we've done with Mr. Jim Tucker and are available from Radio Liberty. Jim Tucker is Daniel's partner in this episode and this undertaking, and we'll be putting together a four-tape set, but you can get the three tapes or three CDs now, and they're all different, and they're all fascinating. Now, if you'd like to get the book, The True Story of the Bilderberger Group, it is available by calling 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927. And then, of course, if you'd like to get the tapes or the CDs of my interviews with Daniel, which gives you an excellent overview of what we've been talking about and why they are available at the same number. And then, of course, ladies and gentlemen, certainly the Bilderbergers are simply part of this whole spiritual force working behind the scenes. How do you maintain this movement? As Daniel talked about, the black nobility in the 1400s and 1500s working for exactly the same goal that the Bilderbergers is today. And well, we could go back 5,000 years. There have always been secret societies or semi-secret organizations working behind the scenes, energized by a spiritual force. And this is how it's been able to continue, generation after generation after generation. And, of course, the ultimate goal is a one-world government, a one-world religion with the destruction of Christianity, and, of course, a one-world ruler who will be the Antichrist. And that is the driving force behind this whole incredible movement, even though many of the people involved have no idea what this is about. This is why you need to get my book, Brotherhood of Darkness. You need to get my talk, a more recent talk called The Forbidden Secret. It comes with a syllabus. If you want to understand finances and certainly how to protect yourself because we're going into an economic tailspin, you want to get my talk on the financial tsunami and be sure to get the syllabus with it, which just comes at a reduced cost. But you want to know how to access the information from the Federal Reserve Board and see what they've been doing to us. And then, of course, if you request, why we can send you several of our newsletters, Financial Collapse 1, Financial Collapse 2, are posted on our website of RadioWD.com. Financial Collapse 3 will be up there, hopefully within a week and a half or so. And then, of course, Financial Collapse 4, I'm in the process of writing, to explain to you why they are intent upon destroying our economy and how this may be the best possible thing that we can do. And as terrible as it's going to mean for many, many people, the destruction of the life savings of people, it may give us an opportunity to save America, because you have to understand that we could have all the money in the world and lose our freedom. It would mean nothing. Freedom is the most precious possession that God could give us other than his own love. And remember, where the spirit of the love is, the spirit of the Lord is, there is liberty. We're involved in a spiritual battle being fought on a political, ideological, and cultural battlefield. If you'd like to get the items we've mentioned, the book, The Bilderbergers, the interviews with Daniel Estin and with Jim Tucker, and then, of course, if you'd like to get our talk on the forbidden secret, or the secret behind the secret, or the secret mysteries of America's beginning, it is all basically about these same secret societies. They've always been here. And, of course, their ultimate goal, they feel, is within their reach now. But if we allow this to happen, then freedom as we know it will become a nightmare, and everything that our men have fought and died for through the years will simply have been for naught. If you care about America, if you care about our future, if you care about your freedom, if you care about your children, then join us in this epic struggle. Our number, 1-800-544-8927, 1-800-544-8927. Our webpage, RadioLiberty.com, where you can pull down our newsletters. You can pull down many of the videos we've produced for nothing. You can certainly listen to our programs there for nothing. You can listen to the archive programs, the live programs, the MP3 programs. And then please pray for America. Pray for revival. Pray for our leaders and our ministers, but pray for Radio Liberty, for our provision and protection. Till Monday, may the Lord be with you.